Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. We don't have a quorum quite yet. We need one more member to come in, and we will have a quorum, but we can start with the presentation of our agenda today. When I do get a quorum, I will interrupt the proceedings. We'll call the meeting to order and then proceed with the bill in a manner in which we can vote on it. We will take no votes until the quorum is established. Representative Hackbarth, you're first on the agenda today. Can you tee up your bill and talk about it? And we've talked about the amendment a little bit, and we can have discussion, members. And then whenever our ninth member gets here, we'll get started with voting on the amendment and so on. So, Representative Hackbarth, 1283, we'll consider in front of the committee for discussion purposes. Welcome to the committee, and if you would proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. What we have before us is House File 1283. Mm-hmm. House File 1283 originated in the Environment and Natural Resources Policy and Finance Committee, and it's a bill that I put together as a off-road recreational vehicle bill. And it's kind of an omnibus off-road vehicle bill. It has items such as ATVs, off-road motorcycles, watercraft, those kinds of things in the bill. And so these are some issues that we wanted to address this year. Mr. Chairman, we're going to have an amendment. We've been working with the Department of Natural Resources. We've been working with the Department of Public Safety to come to some compromise on some of these issues. One of the sections will be deleted from the bill. We could not come to a compromise with the DNR, so we're going to make a motion to delete that particular section. And then we will have another amendment to get the bill in the shape that we like that has to do with dual registration of off-road motorcycles. And we do have the dual registration issue is before this committee. There's a number of other things in here, but the issues that you're going to be wanting to look at is the dual registration of the off-road motorcycles and then also a couple of ATV issues. And with me today, Mr. Chairman, I have Mr. Jonathan Bone, who represents both the ATV Association and the off-road motorcycle folks, and he would explain some of the issues that we're going to address before this committee.
Well, Mr. Representative Hackbarth, thank you for starting the bill out. We do have a quorum now, so if you'll pause for just a moment before we get to Mr. Bone's testimony, I will call the meeting to order, and the clerk will be noting the roll as we come and go here. Members, we have a quorum now, so we can do a couple things. One is, if you'll indulge us, Mr. Hackbarth, is the minutes from the last meeting. The chair has one question. Representative Eakin, were you here at the last meeting? I thought you were.
I was not.
You were not, so you were excused. Okay.
Yes.
Good. Thank you. I thought I remembered your voice in the last meeting. But okay. Members, further questions or comments on the minutes? Seeing none, if someone wants to move the minutes.
So move, Mr. Champion.
Thank you. Representative Champion moves the minutes. Further discussion? Seeing none, let's vote. All those in favor signify by aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The minutes are adopted. Thank you. Members, and now we have House File 1283. I'd entertain a motion to put House File 1283 in front of us, and it needs to go from here to the General Register, Representative. Is that correct?
That'd be correct, Mr.
So we can move to the General Register. Motion. Representative Biskins moves. House File 1283, recommended fast move to the General Register.
And Mr. Chairman, to get the bill in the shape we'd like, could I move? Have someone move the 399 amendment?
Representative. Okay, now members, to be clear, that's the one that was just handed to us.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct. There's two amendments. The 394 amendment was incorrectly drafted, okay. And the 399 is the correct amendment.
Representative Biskins moves the 0399 amendment. Members, you see the right one there? We're clear? Good. Thank you. To the amendment, Representative, is there further discussion?
Should we put
the bill in the shape you'd like?
That's the shape that we'd like to have it in.
Members, compelling questions before we vote? Seeing none, let's vote. All in favor signify by aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Hackbart, the bill is in
the shape. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Then I would like to have Mr. Bowen explain why the bill is here and why his association would like to see these things happen.
Members, the bill is before us for the two issues Representative Hackbart discussed. This bill started in Environment and Natural Resources Committee, on which I sit, and I requested that the bill come here primarily for roadway permits, dual registration, I think some issues dealing with title, and so on and so forth. Mr. Bowen will explain that to us. Mr. Bowen.
Mr. Chair and committee members, thank you very much. My name is Jonathan Bowen. I'm here today representing the All-Terrain Vehicle Association of Minnesota and the Amateur Riders Motorcycle Association. We are the user group associations for both the all-terrain vehicles and dirt bikes. I will start by running through the parts of the bill that are pertain to this committee. First would be Section 2, starting on line 2.1. This is the dual registration of off-highway motorcycles. In the past, you were able to take your off-highway motorcycle that was equipped with the proper safety equipment and have it inspected and then be able to ride it on certain roadways. And recently that changed, and we would like to still have the opportunity to do this and, of course, meet all the safety requirements. So the amendment that you adopted, the 399 amendment, what it does is it requires any of these off-highway motorcycles to meet both state and federal safety standards. And then also we've worked with the Department of Vehicle Services to clean this up a little bit. I don't know if we're in complete agreement yet, but we have the amendment was the compromise language. Also, we worked with the Highway Patrol on the proper inspection that these motorcycles would require. And I spoke with the Highway Patrol before this meeting, and they're okay with the language in the amendment. We'll go to then Section 13. Which is on page 7.3. This section adds the off-highway motorcycles as defined in Section 2 under the definition of motor vehicle. Then we'll go to Section 15. Section 15 pertains to all-terrain vehicle use on the roads. Currently, local governments are allowed to pass ordinances that allow these machines on certain designated roadways. And in the language, you can see what we're doing is on lines 8.29 to 8.31, we're deleting an old definition of ATV and replacing it with the statutory citation so that it remains current as the definitions change. Also, as you can see on 8.26 and 8.28, we're deleting the words four-wheel because there are all-terrain vehicles that have three wheels and six wheels. So we want to make sure that those are included. We'll then go to Subdivision 2, Section 16, and this is in relating to the ordinance I was talking about earlier. Instead of having to renew the ordinance every year, as they currently do, they would then be, local governments would have to only renew it every 3 years, so it reduces their administrative burden. And then again, you see the words four-wheel deleted. Section 17 is a time of operation change. Currently, when the local governments pass the ordinances, we're not allowed to use those machines on the roads at night, even if they're equipped with headlights, taillights, and brake lights, the proper safety equipment. So this would allow the local governments to, if their ordinance allows, have us operate during the nighttime, except during emergency conditions as provided in the ordinance. And then Section 18, 19, and 20, and 21 are all deleting the words four-wheel again from the definition of ATV. Not deleting from the definition, deleting it from the language so that it matches up in all of statute.
Representative Hackbarth, do you think it's important that, or does Department of Vehicle Services have any control or interest in the security interest that would come with titling a vehicle or anything like that? Does that need to be in front of this committee as well?
Mr. Chairman, I don't believe so. We've got this. I have not had them contact me on this issue at all, and this has been around for a while. It's Representative Nelson's legislation.
Well, I noticed they are in the audience.
Yep.
Perhaps if they do. In fact, I see Ms. McCormick is coming down to answer the question. So. Ms. McCormick, welcome to the committee. Do you recall the question I asked?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, Pat McCormick, the Director of Driver and Vehicle Services. And you were talking about the security interest and whether we would title and register the vehicle, mm-hmm. and it meets our requirements. And at this point in time, I think that's why Mr. Bowen was talking about the fact that we're still in negotiations. While we feel this amendment is a step in the right direction, it really doesn't get us to where we need to be in terms of ensuring that we have a manufacturer's certificate of origin or a safety statement from them that it meets all of the federal national safety requirements. And so at this time, we have a call into NHTSA to verify that the language that we're discussing would meet those requirements, as well as we're looking at some legislation that just passed in the state of Washington that addresses this issue to see if there may be some parts of that that may be valuable to be put into this legislation, because it talks about the fact that there are certain off-road motorcycles that may not be allowed, that right now the federal government does not allow for certification of safety standards. And it also talks about documentation of a safety inspection to be completed by a motorcycle or repair shop dealer. And so those are some of the concerns we still have. And so we are still working with the association to see if we can be able to meet a compromise or not at this time.
Mr. Chairman, I believe you're talking about a different section of the bill that has to do with security interests.
Section 12, actually on page 6, I was referring to.
Yeah, that's Representative Nelson's language that we put in the bill.
Okay. Representative Nelson, to this point.
Yeah, that's the same language as in House File 316, mm-hmm. And it came out of a request actually to my senator that's passed over there in the both departments there. Under, if it's a car, when it's titled, you get if you have a loan on it, mm-hmm. the title still goes to the owner. Under current law, if you have a boat, a motorcycle, an ATV, and you have a loan on it, instead of the title going to the owner of the vehicle or the watercraft, the title goes to the bank. Mm-hmm. And so you don't have a top copy of that. What this does is just lines it up the same way we do motor vehicles, where the title goes to the owner. There's a note on it that says there's a first secured party on it, just like we do cars. And that's what the bill does.
That's
what this language does.
Thank you, Representative Nelson, for explanation. Representative Hackbart.
And Mr. Chairman, the DNR is in full support of that, and they can testify that if you like.
If necessary. Okay, thank you for clarifying that. It was one of the concerns that we had in environment. We said we'd touch on that here. So, Representative Moore, I'm sorry, you were on the list for a question.
I can wait until we're done with this.
All right. Questions for Ms. McCormick? Here, thank you, Ms. McCormick, for your testimony and expressing your concerns. And we recognize that Representative Hackbarth is paying attention to those as they move along. So, further questions, comments? Did I hear you say yes? No, Representative Biskins, I'm sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I don't know if Representative Moore was on the list before I was.
Keep that.
Okay. Representative Hackbarth, and maybe you want to ask Mr. Bowen this, and I will credit Representative Vogel on page 10 of your bill. Line 6, would you like me to offer an oral amendment striking the words four-wheel?
Mr. Chairman, that would that would be greatly appreciated.
I would make that oral amendment, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. 10.6. We missed one. Strike that one. Mr. Burroughs, can we just have the author incorporate that into his amendment, or do we need to pass that?
There is no amendment.
Mr. Chair, there isn't an amendment before us right now, so that might work best as a standalone oral amendment.
We'll do that. That's Representative Biskins makes the motion on 10.6. Everybody understand? I think we do. All in favor, signify by aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Four-wheel is stricken on 10.6. The amendment is adopted. Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And, Mr. Chairman, to another section of the bill, Representative Hackbarth on page 4. Section 8 of the bill dealing with the personal watercraft. Representative Hagforth and members of this committee, although I don't know if we have jurisdiction over this at this point, it has come to my attention less than an hour ago that the DNR, who I previously thought could live with this, now is having heartburn with this section. Representative Hagforth, have you heard from, and members, this was a bill that I had introduced, and let me just kind of lay it out for you. As you all well know, in your legislative districts throughout the state, most of our law enforcement folks are pretty decent people. They get a little overzealous, right? And I had a constituent who has been, more than one, believe it or not, who has been ticketed for having their personal watercraft on a lake as late as 45 minutes before sundown, because a strict interpretation of the law says you better keep that chart with you and have your watch with you, because it's 1 hour before sundown. Now, a little compromise here was, well, you know, if especially with the larger watercraft we have being made nowadays, if they have all of your lighting equipment, they've got tail lights, they've got headlights, they've got running board lights, they're no longer these big, loud machines that they had been when they were first introduced. If they look like a boat and act like a boat, well, then treat them like a boat, for goodness sakes. Kind of a libertarian point of view, as I look to my friend to the left. I thought it was kind of a common sense provision for us to put into law, but now I hear that there's some heartburn. Representative Hagforth, have you heard of any concerns with this section?
Representative Hagforth.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Biskins. As you know, I do support this section of the bill, and I really would like to see this passed, and I have been working with the DNR on it. And in the last committee, I did state that I wanted to work with them further on addressing issues with this so we could get this done and make this happen. I did ask them to contact you because this was your bill and your legislation, and apparently that did not happen. I wish it had. I wanted them to discuss this with you before we made any motion on this, but I think at this point, at this late in the game, Representative Biskins, if we could work with them over the summer to do something or come up with some better language or something, I think that's what we're going to have to do, because I believe there will probably be a motion on the floor to take it out or something, but we cannot come to a compromise on this language at this point. I did make a commitment in the last committee that I would work with them, try and come up with something, but we've not been able to come up with that solution.
Representative Biskins.
With that, Mr. Chair, and Representative Hagforth, while it seems some state agencies work with us means do it our way or the highway, and more often than not, I like to say, well, as soon as you show me your election certificate, we'll do it your way. However, I do believe there's a lot of good things in this bill, and I don't want to see any dust-ups, you know, over something that seems to me to be such common sense, and hopefully we can help them see the light over the interim. So, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move to strike Section 8 from the bill.
Representative Biskins moves to strike Section 8. Questions or comments? Mr. Meyer, do you feel compelled to testify to that motion?
Mr. Chairman, just briefly, Bob Meyer, Department of Natural Resources, and in the Environment Committee, we did make a promise, Representative Hagforth, that if we could work this out, we would, most definitely. I understand where the industry's at. To date, none of these larger ones have lights or any navigational equipment on them. So we went back and looked at the industry standards, what's out there. There are no safety lights or any navigation lights on any models that are made. And actually, the Personal Watercraft Industry Association model legislation that we have says no person shall operate a personal watercraft at any time between the hours of sunset and sunrise. So we need to work with Representative Biskins in the industry to figure out where things are going. And if we can get models that are safe to operate at night, we'd be more than willing to talk about that.
Representative Biskins.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Mr. Myers, you know, it comes to me shocking that the industry wouldn't invest funds to create a vehicle which could not be used in the way that their creation would be intended to because of current law. I wonder if current law were changed, if they might then manufacture these vehicles with side lights, tail lights, and headlights. But that's just me applying what I think is common sense.
Okay, Representative Biskin, thank you for your comments. Well, we've heard the motion, although this I wasn't anticipating discussing boats in this committee. Nonetheless, in deference to our colleagues who are requesting the motion, is there further discussion? Seeing none, let's vote. All in favor of the Biskin's motion, indicate by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Mr. Burris, I'm sorry, I should have asked you first if you had the amendment the way it was intended.
Mr. Chair, yes, I do.
You do. Okay, so we're good. Thank you. The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Thank you, Representative Biskin. Further discussion to the bill?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I do have a question procedurally. There are a number of fees in this bill. Mm-hmm. Will this be going to bill be going to Ways and Means?
That is an outstanding question. Representative Hackworth, should we send this to Ways and Means because of the fees?
Mr. Chairman, I have not seen a physical note on this. I don't believe it has to go to Ways and Means, but I don't mind stopping at Ways and Means if we need to.
Mr. Chair, if I might continue.
Morrow,
thank you, Mr. Chair, and I was asking about the fiscal note earlier, and I know the fiscal note, I don't know if it's not yet prepared, but if a fiscal note is on its way and there are fees in the bill, Mr. Chair, I would request that the maker of the original motion consider amending that motion to send the bill to Ways and Means.
Thank you. Ms. Zewers, is there a fiscal note on the way for this that you're aware of?
Mr. Chair and members, a fiscal note has been requested on the bill, but it is not completed at this time.
Okay, then I think we probably should deflect it to Ways and Means just to touch the fees before we move it to the floor. Thank you, Representative Morrow, for pointing that out. Further questions to the bill as amended twice now, three times actually.
No.
Before we ask the motion to be actually amended. Seeing none, for anyone else in the audience feel compelled to testify for or against or about this bill, House Bill 1283, as amended? Seeing none, Representative Hackworth, can I ask Representative Biskins to renew his motion and to change it, to move it to Ways and Means?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I'd like to move that House File 1283 as amended be recommended to pass and move to the Committee on Ways and Means.
That's the motion. Further discussion? Seeing none, let's vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails. The bill is on its way to Ways and Means. Thank you, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, members.
Members, the next bill on the file or the agenda today is House File. So we're going to do Senate File 67. And do I see Representative Nornes here? We've had this discussion before, members, and so we should be familiar with the issue. But we'll let Representative Nornes heat up quickly. And this bill also has, members, there are no fees in this bill. There is a fiscal note, but it's basically adding another use to an existing fee. Ways and Means are right to the floor. Ways and Means? Ways and Means, that'll be the motion. Someone would like to move Senate File 67?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Representative Bogle moves House File 67, recommended passing be sent to the Committee on Ways and Means. Representative Nornes, welcome back to the committee.
Thank you very much.
If you'd like to briefly remind us.
I fully expect it to be visiting Ways and Means, so thank you for that confirmation. Senate File 67 has passed the Senate overwhelmingly, and I consider it to be very non-controversial. What it involves is the businesses in Minnesota that deliver our docks and lifts, new and used, have been paying a permit fee every time they make that trip. So it's per delivery, $15. What this bill does is allows them to buy an annual permit, which is $120, and it greatly improves the efficiency of their business. Also cuts a lot of hassle for other folks that are processing those permits. But and there's some urgency in getting this passed because, as you know, it's spring, and this is the time of the year when they have to make hay, I guess you'd call it, or deliver docks.
Representative Nornes, where is it spring in Minnesota?
Back home. I talked to my wife today. She said it's sunny and nice back home.
It is. Okay, the ice is out.
If you go far enough north, you'll find nice weather.
All right. sorry, proceed.
Yes. I don't have a lot more to add except that this came as a request from one of my constituents who has businesses in Pelican Rapids, Battle Lake, Detroit Lakes, Brainerd, and Cross Lake. So, and they employ about 25 people.
Members, are there further questions for Representative Ornis? We recall this discussion from before. Great. Anyone else in the audience feel compelled to testify for or against the bill? Seeing no one coming forward, Representative Vogel, you renew your motion.
Yes, I do.
Great.
Yes, I do.
As many as are in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails. The bill is on its way to Ways and Means. Thank you, Representative Norris.
Thanks, Member.
Representative Kriesel in the audience yet? Members, we'll lay House Bill 232 aside for a few moments until Representative Kriesel gets here. Representative Szymanski, you prepared to talk about House File 478?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Senate File 478, excuse me. Representative Szymanski, welcome to the committee. If you would like to move your bill, and this is going to go to the General Register.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move Senate File 478 to be recommended to pass and be sent to the General Register.
Thank you. If you'd like to proceed with your testimony and introduce your testifiers.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senate File 478 deals with the issuance of disability license plates for motorcycles. What we have is a situation where, with the economics being what it is, people with disability plates on their vehicles are looking at the price of gasoline and wanting to utilize their motorcycles in transportation. And this bill simply clarifies the statute that allows the Department of Public Safety, Department of Motor Vehicle Services, excuse me, to issue disability plates for motorcycles for a person that already may have disability certification on either another motor vehicle or a pickup. So it simply gives them the opportunity to have an additional disability plate for their motorcycle. With me today are Mr. Tony Larson, Mr. Tom McLaughlin, and Mac Backlund. Mr. Larson, disabled war veteran, as well as Mr. McLaughlin, and Mac Backlund is with us from ABATE of Minnesota. So I'll ask them to provide remarks and rationale for this bill. Mr. Larson?
Good. Thank you, Representative. Mr. Larson, and for all the gentlemen, if you can make your remarks, keep them brief. I think we're generally in accord with what you're trying to do here, but please, Mr. Larson, you proceed.
Mr. Chair and members, thank you for allowing me to be here. Mm-hmm. Again, my name is Tony Larson. I'm a retired sergeant from the Minnesota National Guard in the U.S. Army. I had spent 10 months in Iraq back in 2005 when I was hit by a roadside bomb. Through my injuries, I ended up becoming a right leg amputee. And since my injury, I have been certified by the state of Minnesota to be able to ride a motorcycle. When I first applied for my license plates for my vehicles, I was informed on the application form that I could only receive two placards, either two hanging placards or one placard and one license plate. Currently, I have the license plate on my personal vehicle. The hanging placard goes on my wife's vehicle. I have no third option to put one on my motorcycle. Again, with the rising cost of fuel, I would like to get out and ride my motorcycle to save on my fuel costs. When I ride my motorcycle, I have to park anywhere from midway to the end of the parking lot, and then I have to walk into the store. It's quite a distance, especially since I just got a new prosthesis and learning how to walk after 5 months and not being able to walk on a prosthesis. So by getting a handicap license plate or placard for the motorcycle, it'd make the walk a lot easier and less treacherous for me, especially like this spring when it's wet or slick roads out there. So, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Larson. Mr. Backlund, are you next, or
Tom?
Mr. McLaughlin. please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. Is this mic close enough?
You're doing fine.
Okay. I probably am in a little different situation than Tony. I got out of the Marine Corps in 1968 as a above-the-knee amputee, and immediately got back to Minnesota, and I rekindled my interest in motorcycles. In the 80s, the Department of Transportation allowed motorcyclists to have a handicap plate, which I do have. In 1992, and I'm not quite sure of the reason why, they amended the statute to allow only one license plate on a vehicle and one placard. You had to turn in your motorcycle license plate or your placard or your vehicle license plate. In my case, we had a personal vehicle where I had the license plate, and my work vehicle, I used the placard that you hang in the window. So I had to turn in my handicap plate in 1992. Well, 1992, go back those years. I'm 64 years old now and been an amputee for 43 years. So the need is ever present now for me to have to be able to use a handicap spot. And if I were to hang my placard on my motorcycle windshield, you could just about guess how long it would be there. I have a friend in Fairmont who has two of them stolen. So all this bill would do, hopefully, is return the motorcycle eligibility for handicap plate without affecting your other needs or having to go through a special hearing to get a motorcycle plate. And fiscally, if you just took this blue sticker and put a serial number on the bottom of it, you could use any motorcycle plate now and just use this attachment on it. So it wouldn't cost the state any money for drawing up a new plate or screening or anything like that. So, but it's about time. There are a number of older people my age who are riding trikes and sidecars and stuff, so I think it's time we allow those people to have the permit back. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. McLaughlin. Mr. Backlund, comments, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman and members, my name is Mac Backlund. I'm the state coordinator for ABATE of Minnesota. ABATE is an acronym for American Bikers for Awareness, Training, and Education, and is the largest motorcycling advocacy group in the state. We are in full support of this bill. As many people know, motorcyclists have a larger percentage of veterans than the general population, and we feel it's the right thing to do. Also, with the tremendous advances in prosthetics, many activities that were unavailable to people, including motorcycling in the past, are no longer face those barriers. So, Mr. Chairman, I want to thank you for bringing this before the committee. ABATE of Minnesota is in full support. And thank you, Mr. Chairman and members, for your time today.
Appreciate your testimony. Members, are there any questions or comments for any of these gentle people? Representative Biskins?
Thank you. And Representative Szymanski, or maybe one of your testifiers, why doesn't it work to get your plate that you're allowed and put that on the motorcycle, and then your placard, which you can put on whatever vehicle you happen to ride in at the time you're going somewhere? Why doesn't that work?
Well, if...
Mr. McLaughlin?
Excuse me. Thank you. To answer the question, Representative, if you have a personal vehicle, a family car that you drive, you put a license plate on it with handicap. If you have a company vehicle that you do not own or you change vehicles, you use the placard. So you go to work in the morning, you hop out of your family car, you hop into your company vehicle, you don't have a handicap sticker or placard if you choose to have the motorcycle option and have the plate on there now. So the placard is transferable from vehicle to vehicle, and the plate isn't.
To be clear, Mr. McLaughlin, so you're saying everyone that's entitled to a handicap plate you can only have a maximum of two, a plate and a hanger?
Plate
two
and
plates?
A placard.
Representative Biskins, are you tracking with them?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Not quite, because okay. If you can have a plate and a placard, mm-hmm. All right, why wouldn't you choose to put the plate on the motorcycle and then take the placard to whichever vehicle you're in. So if you're in one, if you're in your personal car in the morning, all right, and you've got the placard on it, and now you jump in your work vehicle, the example you used, wouldn't you just take the placard out of the personal vehicle and put it on the work vehicle? I'm not tracking why that doesn't work.
I understand that, Representative, and I appreciate that question, but if you're like me in 25 years of outside sales, I'd get home and I'd realize that I left my placard in the company vehicle, and I'd be in Minneapolis before I realized the next day that I didn't have the placard. And if you have a memory and you can remember that every day, I couldn't.
Representative Hausman.
Mr. Chair, were there any relevant state departments that had any?
I'm going to ask for them in just a moment here. I just thought we'd, while these gentlemen were present, we'd take the moment. Representative Benson, question of these testifiers before
just a comment, especially after last night's news. I just want to thank Mr. Larson for his service.
Mm. Yep, thank you, Mr. Larson. And thank you, Representative Benson, for
Chairman.
Shout out. Representative Schmansky.
Mr. Chairman, I did have a message from the Minnesota State Council on Disabilities, and they are in support of this legislation.
Thank you for sharing that with us. Seeing no further questions for these gentlemen, I'm going to ask, is there anybody from one of the agencies that needs to testify or wants to testify on this bill? Jared, you got anybody from Public Safety about that? Pat, anybody from DVS need to talk about it? Okay. Thank you, and for the record, they're indicating that they're okay and don't feel the need to testify, unless, Representative Hausman, you want to specifically question one of them. Okay, members, thank you. Further questions for Representative Schmansky? Representative Schmansky, closing comments here before we move this to the General Register.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a message that our friends that are motorcycle riders are also members of the Patriot Guard, and they respect our military men and women who have served our country. Mr. Chairman, I move that House Senate File 478 again be recommended to pass and sent to the General Register.
That is the motion. Members, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. You're on your way to the General Register. Thank you, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Gentlemen, thank you for coming in today. Representative Creasel in town yet? I don't see. Representative Sanders, can we go to your bill next? Folks, we're looking for House File 1036 on this one. There is a fiscal note. Representative Sanders, would you move your bill to get it in front of us, and then it needs to go to higher education next, so recommend it pass to higher ed.
I think, Mr. Chair, I move that House File 1036 be recommended to pass and be sent to the Committee on Higher Education.
We have the motion, and the bill is in front of us. Representative Sanders, would you explain House File 1036, please?
Yes, Mr. Chair. House File 1036 is a bill and an effort to ensure optimum efficiency and economy in agency vehicle fleet management and maintenance activities. It was encouraging to see back on April 12th, the governor also mentioned that he would like to move in this direction in dealing with fleet management as well. So I think the concept at least has received some bipartisanship. I have been working with Mr. Burris, and I do have an oral amendment for the bill that is actually being copied so that members can see it. But until that gets here, I'll just kind of keep walking through the bill, Mr. Chair, if that's okay.
Certainly.
What the bill does is it asks the commissioner, or mandates that the commissioner consolidate the fleet agency passenger vehicles and that they manage acquisition, replacement, fuel maintenance of these vehicles. What it also does is keep public safety vehicles out of this bill. We are not going after any public safety vehicles or any of the MnDOT trucks such as snowplows or other big trucks that carry more than a ton in carrying capacity. So those are not included in the bill. The current bill asks that the commissioner reduce the number of state-owned vehicles by 15% by June 30th, 2015, compared to the number that we own or will own on July 1st of 2011. So that's a spread out over those years. And it's important, I think, for members to know, too, that that 15% reduction is overall. I don't intend it to be necessarily, or is it meant to be, a 15% reduction in every agency or department, but a 15% overall reduction across all the state vehicles. One of the things that we also mandate is that the commissioner conduct an inventory of state-owned and leased vehicles and an inventory of state-owned or operated vehicle maintenance fueling facilities, and that they also establish a process for consolidating or privatizing, if that's what the commissioner chooses to do, to state vehicle fleet and state vehicle fleet maintenance and fueling facilities. The rest of the language, for the most part, on page two, is, I guess, advice or encouragement to the commissioner, but options that the commissioner would have in negotiating with the departments he heads or agencies, as well as if he chooses, because we also give the commissioner authority to delegate to another agency or authority the power to do so as well. Right now, Mr. Chair, the pages are handing out an oral amendment that I have, and I guess I need a copy as well around just so I can mention it. In speaking with Mr. Rhodes and having some conversations, we have decided to take some of the rigidity of the 15% mandate reduction out of the bill and change it to a goal of mandate reduction. What the amendment that you have in front of you says, the oral amendment would be page 1, line 17, deleting by 15%, and then insert over fiscal years 2012 through 2015 period. The commissioner shall determine the optimal reduction, comma, following a state goal of 15%. So what this does, Mr. Chair and members, is ask the commissioner to still participate in mandate reduction, but allowing the commissioner to determine what the exact right size number is. I do think that we need to have a goal of at least 15% and see how close we can get to that goal. But we did want to take some of the rigidity out of the current bill to make sure that we were actually accomplishing the good that we hope and intend to with this bill.
Representative Sanders, thank you for your comments and for offering the HRD 1 amendment. Would you like to move that amendment this time, and we'll discuss and adopt that?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I do move the HRD 1 amendment.
Members, we have the HRD 1 amendment in front of us. Are there questions to that, Representative Hausman?
Mr. Chair, and maybe to staff, when you say following a state goal of 15%, I mean, normally if I set goals, I intend to reach my goals. Mm-hmm. But we've already made the decision that 15% is right. I mean, everything in the bill seems reasonable. It does occur to me that we've just been through 8 years of a very conservative administration, which presumably has been doing all of the efficient and effective and economic things. And now, over and above that, we're naming a percentage. So I'm wondering about even say, I mean, we've already said the state goal is 15%, but it's not based on the inventory, and it's not based on the establishing the process that the bill calls for. So I guess I'm still wondering about that following a state goal. What does that mean exactly, following a state goal?
Well, my question for Representative Sanders was, first of all, comments, if I may kind of maybe set the stage for some discussion around your comments, Representative Hausman, because I think they're good ones we should discuss here. Thank you for taking out on line 1.16, I think since I first heard the bill on state government operations, public safety purposes, which I assume includes snow plows, which came in really handy this year, so we're glad
yes,
to have
Mr.
them.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
and I know panel trucks up to one-ton capacity would seem that the larger vehicles then that usually are only employed for a specific purpose, like plowing snow or things like that, seem to be exempted. The question, though, I think is on the 15% goal, is that an objective we're trying to achieve, or is that a hard number that means somebody's pay review or has some legal standing that we will be here or else? Can you speak to that for us?
Mr. Chair, originally the goal was a conversation starter. It was something that was a hard number. In speaking with various committee hearings, there was a lot of angst over the 15% number, which I understand. We've never had any agency, any department suggest a different number, a better number. Like I said, I've spoken with Mr. Rhodes a couple times. Nobody seems to know what that number should be, although the intent of the bill seems to be moving in a positive direction. So what we wanted to do was take some of that firmness out and say, yes, we do have a goal of that, but if the commissioner determines that 12% right sizes our fleet and such, then that's what we want to do. But we do want to have a goal of making sure that we are accomplishing all the criteria set out in the bill.
And to be clear, the commissioner we're referring to here in Chapter 16 is the Commissioner of Administration?
Yes, Mr. Chair, that's correct.
Okay. Representative Nelson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I, too, heard this bill in government operations, and we had this discussion about a hard goal or a soft goal, and I guess I'm glad to see this amendment because I think the discussion we had there was, you know, we're setting a goal, and we don't know if that's the optimal goal that we can reach. But I do like this. The only question I have is this: the language again that Representative Hausman talked about, following a state goal. Is that the right language to have, or do we want to attempting to reach? I mean, is that the right language to have? I guess that just doesn't make sense to me. Total sense to me.
Deflect that to Mr. Burris with this added thought. We used to, in the Energy Committee, we had an objective, which meant we did our best to get to that everyone knew that's kind of where we'd like to be, but if we couldn't get there, we knew we gave it our best effort. Goals seemed to indicate that there was some legal responsibility to be there. Mr. Burris, can you shed any light on that for us? Is that a fair question for you?
Mr. Chair and members, I'm not sure that I've got a flushed out answer without looking into the case law a little bit on that, but I would note that that whole subordinate clause that's start following a state goal follows after authority given to the commissioner to determine the reduction amount.
Okay.
If someone wants to work on an amendment to change that following phrase, I can certainly.
Let me suggest this to the committee then. We've taken a step with this committee, or this HRD1, which is in front of us and we need to vote on. Remind me to be sure we vote on this before we move on. But you're moving to the Higher Ed Committee. Did you hear the discussion about goal versus objective and how that might work? Because I see what you're trying to do here with giving the Commissioner of Administration the responsibility of determining what is a prudent number. Because I'm sure we'd all be really sore at you if they reduced snowplows by 15% just because we said so. And I'm being somewhat facetious with your representative. But can you carry that thought forward when you go to higher ed and think about objective versus goal and whether that is more clear of the intent of the legislation?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I am fully willing to do that. And I must apologize to Mr. Burris. I really put him under the gun, probably coming to him about 15 minutes ago with this idea of, which I had a much, simpler way of doing it, but Mr. Burris had instructed me that didn't quite get where we were going. So his amendment here does reach my intent, but we will work on language that will work better going to higher education. But this stems out of a meeting that just got through having with the Department of Administration at about noon today. So certainly willing to work on whether or not it should be a goal or an objective. The committee's willing to put this on.
Well, Mr. Burris is a trained professional. We're very fortunate to have him in this committee. So
agreed.
Glad you're working with him. Further questions to the HRD1 amendment before we adopt it? Seeing none, let's move to a vote. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails. The HRD1 amendment is adopted. And thank you for hearing the discussion on that. Now, Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I also heard this bill in GovOps, and
I think I applaud you, Representative Sanders, for this HRD 1 amendment. I think it takes away some of the concern about rigidity. But there's another one that I have, and we visited about this in committee, and that's on line 23 and 24. It appears as if the language of the bill, when you say the commissioner must establish a process for consolidating and privatizing vehicle fleet and maintenance, et cetera, that we are then mandating this privatization process, whether it, you know, makes sense or not. And I think we heard from the Department of Administration that this actually may increase costs, that there's employees that they have on staff anyway that perform some of these functions, and then if we then require some outsourcing, that actually may be counterproductive. And I'm wondering, you know, and I don't know if the department is here to speak on that, but you heard their arguments, Representative Sanders, and I'm wondering whether, you know, that might be changed to more permissive language as well, because I think you have some good goals in here. I especially like, you know, line 13 and 14 on page 2 of mission criteria. But, you know, as long as this is in here, I don't think I can support your bill, and I don't know if you're willing to be flexible on that as well.
Representative Sanders.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Hornstein, the intent is to be flexible. The language that I read in here says consolidating or privatizing. And I guess, you know, I guess maybe perhaps we could ask Mr. Burris again if it means they have to do both, or if the commissioner has the opportunity or authority to consolidate where it makes sense, if it makes sense to privatize, it makes sense. My intent is for it to be flexible so that we're actually accomplishing the good that we need to. And I guess, Mr. Chair, I'd like to defer to Mr. Burris if I read it the way I read it, or if Representative Hornstein reads it the correct way.
Mr. Burris, can you answer that? But let me just add a word of caution. I'm not interested. I think the committee shouldn't be interested in making up an amendment on the fly.
Correct.
Representative Hornstein is raising a good point. And there is someone from MnDOT here to testify about the bill. So if we could have Mr. Burris speak to your question, this conversation,
yep,
for a
agreed
moment, and then have MnDOT come forward, we could let it steep for a moment. Mr. Burris?
Mr. Chair and members, I in turn would in general defer to the agency on its interpretation of whether it would view this as a requirement for privatization. My read is that I don't see it as requiring privatization, but obviously that is provided for as an option in the language.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair, I mean, that's my intent, and, you know, again, we can hear from the agency and Representative Hornstein if there's better language to arrive at that intent. Giving options to the commissioner, I'm fine with that, to talk offline more.
And you have two more stops, at least, with this bill to work on that. Representative Hornstein, do you have a follow-up?
No, thank you, and I do really appreciate that. And, again, I want to make sure that the bill doesn't – it has laudable goals, and I would, again, based on the testimony we heard in GovOps, you know, would have concerns just about those two sentences, I suppose.
Okay.
Thanks. I'd be curious to hear from MnDOT.
I am, too. Mr. Lund, are you here to speak to us about this matter? Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, committee members, good afternoon. My name is Stephen Lund. I have a couple pages of statement here, and we'll answer any questions as well afterwards. I am the state maintenance engineer for the Minnesota Department of Transportation. I am responsible for corporate level fleet oversight for the DOT. I'm here on behalf of MnDOT to speak to House File 1036. MnDOT owns and maintains approximately 4,000 vehicles of various size and functions, everything from snow fighting equipment to exploratory off-road vehicles such as drill rigs. These 4,000 vehicles represent both on-road and off-road vehicles. Of that 4,000, MnDOT owns and operates approximately 3,000 licensed on-road vehicles. And of those 3,000 on-road vehicles, approximately 1,600 are considered light-duty vehicles that would be impacted by this legislation. Now, light-duty vehicles are used across all of MnDOT functions, from maintenance services to delivery of the construction program. So I want to emphasize that the light-duty vehicles are used across our functions. of the department. Of the 16,000 vehicles affected by this legislation, 80% I would call working vehicles. Now, I'm not saying that the other ones aren't working, but 80% of those vehicles are used in our maintenance operations and used in the delivery of the construction program, pickups ranging from half ton up to one ton pickups, and also SUVs for such areas as survey crew work and minivans and cargo vans for cargo purposes. So again, that's 80%, or about 1,300 of those 1,600 are working vehicles. Now, on average, across our light-duty fleet, our vehicles are putting on approximately 13,000 miles per year per vehicle. And MnDOT has primarily two concerns with this legislation. First of all, this legislation transfers management of a portion of our fleet to a third party when we have an established active management fleet management culture in MnDOT. MnDOT has a progressive fleet management operation that I would say that I think the Department of Administration would echo. MnDOT is fleet management is led by a certified fleet manager who works directly for me, and MnDOT also has designated fleet managers in each of its 8 districts. We are committed to performance measures in the area of fleet management, and we are active in fleet management technologies such as M5, performance measures, skilled fleet repair, and new vehicle technologies. MnDOT prides itself in its bread and butter operations such as snow and ice and delivery of a significant construction program, and a backbone of this effort are the vehicles necessary to get this work done. While I would acknowledge we have vehicles on both ends of the utilization spectrum, I believe we are about right-sized when we have an average usage of about 13,000 vehicles, miles per vehicle. I'm not here to say that MnDOT cannot function under the procedures as described in this bill. I do have concerns of the added overhead and added process that could result if an agency such as ours, one that is actively managing its fleet, is required to administer its fleet through a third party. Our second concern is with the fixed across-the-board cut of 15%. I think some of that has been addressed here already. However, that 15% would translate to about 240 vehicles and translate further to about 3 million miles, work miles, that would have to be dealt with. They would have to be done in another way or not done at all. A couple final comments about the bill. The discussions of fuel and maintenance, it's not real clear how that would translate into our department. I don't know of another agency that operates fixed fuel sites. We have a 35 bulk storage facilities across the state where we run a fuel head program and actively monitor fuel use. I don't know if how this bill addresses the fuel. It just says fuel. And then also from a maintenance and repair perspective, we have well over 90% of all the mechanics, I think, across the state worker mechanics that work for the Department of Transportation. Those mechanics, their priority is on the heavy-duty repair, and we need those folks to be ready and on the spot for heavy-duty repair when we need it. But at times, we also utilize those folks to do some repair on light-duty. However, we do outsource that as well. We use it as a workload leveling. If we have available heavy-duty mechanics, we will do some light-duty repair. But they're mainly there for repair of the heavy-duty stuff. So how that repair and maintenance affects these number of mechanics, I think, in the approximate neighborhood of 100 heavy-duty mechanics, I'm not sure how that would impact. And finally, if someone was to ask me about setting a goal for reduction, I think first it should be based on a performance measures approach, where you set a performance measure in place, and then you set a target to meet that performance measure. And those vehicles that don't fall within that target or live up to that target then are dealt with in terms of what's the next best approach to them, to share them with someone else or to get rid of them. So that's all the statement I have right now.
Representative Morrow.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Chair, the testimony was leading me back to lines 1.23 and 1.24. And I don't object, Representative Sanders, to consolidation or privatization, although I think on line 1.23 it sets it up as a false alternative. We're either going to consolidate or we're going to privatize. Mm-hmm. And I'm worried, for example, about the maintenance yards that are around the state. If they can't be consolidated because they're just putting them too far from one another, I'm thinking of Gaylord and Mankato, for example, in my district. If they can't be consolidated effectively, does that mean then MnDOT needs to come up with a process for privatizing one of them? So I might suggest to the author that, and I don't want to make an amendment on the fly, so I'm not going to move this as an amendment, but maybe the words when feasible or when cost effective, or there be some way that would say you don't have to consolidate or privatize if the commissioner finds that neither would serve the state goal.
Representative Sanders.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Morrow, I wrote that down. We'll give it some thought. My intention, this is over every state, every vehicle that applies to this bill. So it's not just in MnDOT. If it doesn't apply, if the commissioner, who I believe he's referring to as the third party, which is what our bill does in establishing some accountability and establishing some actual communication. There is no centralized fleet management that we have at the state that overviews and looks all of the state fleet that we have. It's overall. So we'll give some thought to that, but again, it's not my intention that we must consolidate or privatize inside of every single department or agency. But that we take a look at how we are operating today, which there seems to be a lot of disjointedness and a real lack of communication across agencies and departments.
Follow-up, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Sanders. Again, I don't know that the words when feasible or when, you know, if you put some kind of qualification on this 123, 124, I know I would feel a little bit more comfortable as I'm thinking about the different state agencies that have facilities throughout throughout our area and the different functions that they serve.
Okay. Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To the testifier from MnDOT, could you or do you have off the top of your head or would you make available to this committee the trajectory of vehicles in the department over the last, say, 3, 5, 8 years that would fall under this? Has the fleet been growing? Has it been stable? Has it been shrinking? I'm sure you've got the hard numbers. Would you provide that in chart form for the committee?
Mr. Chair, Representative, we have lots of data on fleet. We very actively measure our fleet, so we can provide. Again, I want to make sure, did you say trajectory?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, in other words, could you let us know, and I don't need a chart for this, but has the fleet been growing in the last few years? Has it been shrinking? Where have we been with this?
Mr. Bond.
Mr. Chair, Representative, our fleet in the past few years has grown after a period of downsizing, and my belief is it because of the size of the program we've been doing in construction, we've actually added some additional vehicles. But recently back, we went through a reduction period where we instituted our performance measures approach, and we reduced vehicles based on the results of those performance measures. Well, I could get you specific data on that.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for that offer. I would like the specific data because anecdotally, I've been told anyway that since the change in the last commissionership that with the new commissioner in place that the fleet has indeed been growing, and so I'd like to see that, and if you could provide some rationale for why that's been occurring, that would be appreciated.
Before I go to Representative Hausman, Mr. Lund, two things. First of all, when you send over data about how many vehicles, you can leave the air compressors off the list. That would be appreciated. Although I think Representative Hausman wanted to see the air compressors.
Mr. Chairman, this will only be mobile fleet.
Just mobile fleet. You mentioned just a moment ago the performance data that the previous commissioner had instituted, which got to a phrase I think Representative Hausman also used called right-sizing. Downsizing may be where we want to go, but right-sizing is a key phrase here, I think, for this committee. If for a while that number went down, are we using the same performance data as it kind of increases again as the workflow picks up? Are we still playing by the same kind of objective?
Mr. Chairman, right, our fleet measures have not changed in quite some time. Mm-hmm. We are actually analyzing our measures right now for appropriateness to look at the ability to average out our utilization over a number of years instead of just the past 12 months, because many of our vehicles are on a seasonal basis, and in some instances our construction fleet, for instance, reports to a project that is very close to its base, and those vehicles do not receive many miles, and our targets are based on miles. So in subsequent years, we would want to share that vehicle with someone who's driving farther to a construction site. We primarily have three measures in our department on our fleet: utilization, life cycle, the age, and then a performance measure that looks at our reactionary maintenance versus our preventative maintenance. So we have three institutionalized performance measures.
Thank you for that explanation. Representative Hausman.
Mr. Chair, you've already referenced. I was just going to remind us that we did, receive extensive inventory. I didn't save it, but I'm sure your committee administrator has it somewhere that I think probably details much of what Representative Simms was asking for.
Well, I know we certainly got a snapshot of the equipment as it appeared this spring. Whether or not it had previous historical data, I don't know, but I'll never forget the pages of air compressors.
Yes.
That was impressive. Representative Morrow, do you have one quick question for me? Great, thank you. Further questions for the testifier? Mr. Lund, thank you for your testimony to the committee. Representative Sanders, do you have any wrap-up comments here before we... we have another gentleman to
speak
to you.
Yes, Mr. Chair, one additional testifier, it looks like.
Please.
My name is Tim Morris. I'm with the Department of Administration.
Okay.
And I would just like to address the committee, if I could, for a moment and say that we recognize, over at administration, we recognize the fleet management program that MnDOT has put together, and also the program that DNR has put together. They're very good programs. Our intent is to bring everyone up to the level of these agencies that have good programs in place. It is not, certainly not, to hold anyone back.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Morris. That was going to be the chair's closing question to the author of the bill, was that MnDOT's got some performance measures that gets at that right-sizing thing, and we certainly hope that you're talking across the silos there. So thank you for that assurance. Questions or comments for this testifier, Representative
Hussein? Oh, not for the testifier.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony. Anyone else in the audience feel compelled to testify about this bill? Seeing no one approaching, Representative Sanders' comment, and then Representative Hornstein has a question for you. Or perhaps Representative Hornstein, you want to ask your question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a comment. I think Representative Morrow has some great ideas and to address certainly my concerns about those two lines at the bottom of the first page. And so I just encourage you to think about that. And again, I think that Representative Morrow's question and suggestion is a good one. And hopefully moving forward we can get to that point. Because at this point I can't support the bill, but I think I'm open to some of the changes that he was suggesting.
Okay, Representative Biskin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a quick question on the record for clarification. Representative Sanders, on page 2, lines 13 and 14, at first reading of this section, look like, holy buckets, we're going to all plug-in electric hybrid vehicles. But as I examine this a little further, it could be construed to say if our emission standards are actually so onerous that they're driving up the costs, that we could adjust the standards in that direction up to make it more reasonable. But the overarching goal is the fleet fuel expense. Am I reading your intention correctly on that section, Representative?
Representative Sanders.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Biskins. The intention here is to get at lowering the fleet fuel expense and leaving the authority to the commissioner on how that is best done. Realizing as well in this bill that many emission standards already exist in federal and state statutes.
Thank you. Representative, thank you. Further questions? Let's see. Representative Sanders, you want to renew your motion? This is going to higher ed.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Again, I will move that House File 1036 be recommended to pass as amended to higher education.
Thank you. Members, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. The bill is passed as amended to higher ed, to be clear.
Thank you, Mr.
Amended.
Chair and committee.
Now, House File, gentle folks, let's jump back to House File 232. Representative Morrow carried this bill last year, so I'm going to ask Representative Morrow if he'd like to move this. It's going to the General Register, Representative.
Mr. Chair, actually, I think Representative Priesel is here now.
He is here, yes. Well, he's not a committee member,
yes,
however.
So I will be happy to move House File 232 and have to pass and move to the General Register.
Thank you for the motion. Representative Kreisel, welcome to the committee. We're glad you're here. You want to explain the bill to us, and we'll talk about it for a few moments.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Morrell. Members, House File 232 simply expands the language of eligibility for Gold Star license plates from a parent or a spouse to a legal guardian or a sibling. So there's people that just want to honor their loved one. All this does is makes a couple more people that were family, makes them eligible for this.
Thank you. Members, questions of the author of the bill? Do you have anyone who would like to testify for or against the bill, Representative?
I do not, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
Mr.
Chair. Representative Morrow?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Kreisel. As I mentioned, I brought this bill in the past. I've been contacted by brothers and sisters. I also know that they have talked with the, I want to say it's the Gold Star Convention or Conference, and I may have that wrong term incorrectly, but that they've received support there as well to move this forward. So thank you for moving the bill ahead.
Thank you.
Okay. If you can comment if you wish, or otherwise Representative Murdoch has a question or comment.
No, just on a personal note, I've three of my close friends gave their lives while we were serving in Iraq. I'm close with the families. I just think it's right if the sister or the brother wants to get a license plate and honor their fallen family member, I think we should help them be able to do that.
Thank you. Representative Murdoch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and Representative Kreisel. Thank you for this addition to the bill. It was my bill originally in 2009 put this plate into law. So, members, again, I would ask for your support and appreciate your sacrifice and your friends' sacrifice for our country.
Thank you.
Further questions or comments for Representative Kreisel? Seeing none, members, Representative Morrow, would you like to renew your motion to?
I will. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
To the General Register. Members, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? The motion prevails. The bill is on its way to the General Register. Thank you, Representative Kreisel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Members, the last bill on our agenda today is House File 977, Representative Cornish. Representative Cornish, we've saved the last 27 minutes for discussion of this bill.
Mr. Chair, I don't know where it's going yet.
I have listed here that we're going to hear the bill and lay it over, and we need to take it up again. We can do that. I have no other direction here. That's right. I'm sorry. We're waiting for a fiscal note. That's the deal. There is a fiscal note on this bill. let's see, this is the one that says that we will keep all the, this bill says we'll keep all of the dispatch points open, correct?
Yes.
And there is a fiscal impact to the state on that. So we're waiting for the fiscal note to come through. And when that does, we can take this bill up again and bring it to conclusion at that time. But today we want to start the hearing and hear your testifiers, and if we have time, pepper you with questions as the need may be. So what we will do first, members, is someone can move House File 977 to get it in front of the committee.
Mr. Chair, could we possibly move it for possible inclusion, at least to keep it open for... I don't want it to be just informational only, if that's
okay.
Let's
move it.
Okay,
let's move it for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill then. And even though that bill has left this committee, it could always be amended on the floor or in conference. So, Representative Szymanski, would you like to make that motion?
I'll move House File 977 for possible inclusion.
Thank you. Representative Cornish, the bill is in front of us. Representative Ward, welcome to the committee, both of you.
Mr. Chair and members, I'll make a quick two-minute presentation and then turn it over to Representative Ward, who wants to say a few words, and then we'd like to get right to the testifiers.
Sure.
House File 977 prohibits or stops the patrol or the DPS from consolidating dispatch centers. What I have here in my hand here is a book that originally put out the dispatch centers. And the figures might be off a hair, but I'll try to stay as close to what I think it was, and they can revamp them a little bit if they want. But what I have here is about 10 years ago, DPS went to these tactical operations centers, and they are in Brainerd, Detroit Lakes, Duluth, Mankato, Marshall, Rochester, St. Cloud, Thief River Falls, and Virginia. They were supposed to provide for emergency response, enforcement, incident management, transit services, maintenance operations, traffic management, and traveler information. Now, the problem with this is now that they want to consolidate them and bring them back into three dispatch centers, the deployment that they used for reasoning to put the dispatchers centers out in this book, or the tactical operations centers, were these four. Ensure consistency and interoperability, provide standardization, enhance partnerships, and improve resource utilization. Problem is that upon continued questioning, the patrol has admitted that they don't know if there will be a savings. And Mr. Chair and members, I would say that there will be a cost to this. And if there's anything that my bill would do, it would be a savings. It would be the fiscal impact. The very reasons they put these things out there is contradicts why they want to drag them back in. The numbers of law enforcement agencies that the dispatchers will tell you have requested that they don't do this. You remember the building, the big beautiful building that you funded in Mankato, what was it, Representative Beard or Mr. Chair, was it $15 million or something on that building? They want to keep the dispatch centers there instead of moving to Rochester. The district engineer at Mankato thinks this is a bad idea and has got space for them and cannot figure out why they're not putting them in a new building and sending them to Rochester. And many of the people down there believe that it'll be a cost if they do that, and it'll be a savings if they keep them where they're at now. And so I can't figure out for the life of me why they're doing this without a cost savings, I believe, or without a how they cannot give us the actual cost. We've asked for a number of times, as the dispatchers will tell you, we still don't know how much it'll cost to do this. And they can argue that this was a plan started a while back about a consolidation, but the problem with that is I talked to a retired law enforcement member on that consolidation task force who said that it was very clear early on that they were given a message once they seen the thing was going south and there was no savings to come up with an idea on how to implement this plan. And regardless. So that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. And now I'll turn it over to Representative Ward and then get into the dispatcher's testimony.
Representative Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members. And I'll just make a few other comments, and we'll hear from the dispatchers. The last time we heard this bill in the previous committee was Representative Cornish and myself, and I concur with everything that Representative Cornish said. I've been working on this bill for this project for about 2 years now. I've talked to Colonel Donaski. I've talked to former Commissioner Campion on this, and I can't get the answers either. I asked how much it's going to cost to do the consolidation. No answer. How much is it going to save? We're not sure. So the answers are to the reasons for doing this consolidation are very vague and not at all factual. Members, I guess one of the things that I'm going to say to you is that the public safety concern is real. The public safety concern of every citizen in the state of Minnesota, every corner in the state of Minnesota, is real if the public safety is going to be met through this consolidation. I had a great analogy, Mr. Chair, members, in the last committee using a hospital. And I'm not going to do that again. And the amount of nursing stations, I'm not going to do it again because I think the dispatchers have a better indication of testimony for you. But I will leave you with this. The Metro Center, which is still going to remain, has an east and west portion of their dispatching. They handle it with the east stays on the east and the west stays on the west, and they don't cross and they can't even consolidate the metro area and get a consolidated kind of center going because the importance of having those folks located over here and those folks located here dispatching for their respective geographical locations is critical to the public safety of our citizens of the state of Minnesota. So, members, I just ask you to really have an open mind to this. Local law enforcement, many local law enforcement are not supportive of that. They dispatch for the DNR and MnDOT both. MnDOT and DNR are questionable if this is going to work or not. So the program isn't broken. Why try to fix it? I guess that's the bottom line question, members. And I think let's have our dispatchers down and present the testimony, Mr. Chair and members, if it's okay with you.
I would be honored to have them testify, Representative Ward. Now, I have a list here, but Shauna Davis is first on my list. Would you like to introduce the gentleman who just sat down here?
Mr. Chair, members, yes. I'm Tim Toomey. I've been a dispatcher for Minnesota State Patrol for 16 years, serving both in Duluth and Virginia communication centers. I also want to touch on some of my other background because I think it's relevant to today's discussion. And I recently retired, in fact, February 1st, 2011, after 22 years serving in the Navy, a combination of active and reserve service. I retired as a senior chief information systems technician. In 2003, I was mobilized in support of then Operation Enduring Freedom, and I was assigned as the communications chief for the MAF engineer group, where we actually implemented and operated communications during an 800-kilometer overland movement from Camp Commando, Kuwait, up to Babylon, Iraq. In 2003, I served as the communications chief to make that happen for the Navy SEADs, Naval Construction Force. Yes. 2006, I was recalled to active duty again, and I served as the communications officer for Naval Mobile Construction Battalion in Anbar Province. And we had several detached construction projects at all times, five or six different projects all over Anbar Province, from the Syrian border to Al Asad Air Base to Fallujah. I only point out that background because I think it's relevant. It establishes my qualifications to discuss the effect of communications in a busy operational environment. I'd like to start out by saying, Colonel Danaski, and to the executive staff, this testimony isn't intended to be the least bit disrespectful or insubordinate. However, we've got concerns, and I say we, many members of Minnesota State Patrol, Department of Natural Resources, Department of Transportation, have several questions and concerns about the 2009 State Patrol PSAP restructuring plan. If we believed in our hearts that this was going to improve our ability to serve the citizens of Minnesota, increase our mission effectiveness, and save us money, we would support it. In fact, I've never looked at the aspect of the personal hardship that it's going to cause on the 45 families that could potentially have to relocate their families to consolidated centers. I've always looked at it from the standpoint, can we do it from a mission accomplishment standpoint? And the three questions that always remain unanswered are, why are we consolidating now? What are the costs? And will it work? The three-center system, the three-center model, is it sufficient to take care of the communications needs for three busy agencies in the state of Minnesota? Question number one, I'm going to discuss several points, and these questions will begin to emerge in your own minds as to why are we consolidating. This consolidation, first of all, was not mandated. We have no urgent or compelling consolidation drivers. We don't have buildings that are falling down that are going to require capital investments to build that would make economic sense to consolidate for efficiency's sake. Our existing centers are fully mission capable, modern, updated with the latest electronic 911 systems, computer-aided dispatch, 800 megahertz radio systems, which are being installed now and will be completed by the end of June this year, 2011. The office space in our Transportation Operation Communication Centers, that's a mouthful, I'm going to call it a TOCC from now on. Transportation Operation Communication Centers. This office space is provided by Department of Transportation at minimal cost to State Patrol. We consolidated three state agencies between 2001 and 2005 when the state invested approximately $30 million on the construction of our existing Transportation Operation Communication Center network, the nine centers that we have today. I've also included a link to a MnDOT website that will go into detail on that 174-page migration report, the report that talks about how we got to where we are today. The goal of these centers was to establish an integrated statewide communication and transportation operation network serving rural and smaller urban areas outside the Twin Cities metro area.
The TOCCs were built around a framework of proactive interagency cooperation, updated facilities and technologies, enhanced voice and data communications to improve MnDOT and MSP operational effectiveness, and to improve the overall safety and efficiency of the transportation system in Minnesota. This hasn't changed. This mission hasn't changed. These goals have been met. The proactive interagency cooperation between State Patrol, DNR, and DOT has exceeded expectations and has become a public service multiplier for the state of Minnesota. State Patrol will try to use the staffing issue as justification to consolidate our centers. That in order to fully staff our existing 9 TOCCs, that we've got to hire an additional 34 dispatchers to come up to staffing, adequate staffing levels. It's inaccurate and it's a little disingenuous to imply that we need to hire 34 additional RCOs to bring our centers up to adequate staffing levels. We've been operating at today's levels for over a decade. Prior to that time, we operated with one dispatcher fewer in each of the districts, and not one emergency call has ever gone unanswered by a State Patrol dispatcher. Rather than hiring any additional RCOs, we can simply begin to augment our current staffing levels with something we call virtual consolidation. Okay, and this is a capability we have today. With our current 800 megahertz radio system, this was the last piece that allowed us to become capable of doing a complete virtual consolidation. What that means is if my dispatch center with one operator in Virginia becomes tied up on an event, the 911 network software and operating system recognizes that this dispatcher is tied up and automatically rolls that call over to our backup center in Duluth. Real-time, dynamic changes based on call load and staffing levels. And this is a capability that we have right now. We have the ability to look at our locations for units that we serve through our computer-aided dispatch mapping system. We have the ability to talk to that unit anywhere in the state on our Armor 800 megahertz radio backbone. And we have the ability to receive those 911 calls automatically. This virtual consolidation approach adjusts emergency call routing dynamically and in real time, based on call volume and staffing levels. This is something we can do today. We don't have to spend a dime. We have this capability in most of our 9 TOCCs. It'll be complete by June 2011. That's where we get that 800 megahertz capability so that we can, in fact, talk to any unit statewide via 800 megahertz radio. By developing the virtual consolidation approach, we don't need to decommission 10 or 7 TOCCs that are less than 10 years old. We won't need to spend the untold millions of construction dollars for new facilities in Duluth and Rochester. We won't sacrifice our local and regional situational awareness and the effectiveness of a local transportation center in each district. And we won't need to attempt to relocate 43 dispatchers and their families. It's also inaccurate to say that our current system has very little redundancy. In fact, our current 9 TOCC configuration is far more robust and capable in terms of backup redundancy than the proposed 3-center system. That brings me to question number 2. What's it going to cost?
How many questions are there? 3?
3.
Okay, can we touch 2 and 3 quickly here? Because we're going to come up against a hard deadline because we have sessions scheduled briefly, and I do want to hear from another testifier.
Okay.
Thank you.
We don't know what it's going to cost. This is going to extend over the next 2 bienniums. Facility remodeling in Rochester. The cost of a construction for a new center in Duluth. Right now, the plan is to add a floor to the top of the existing MnDOT headquarters building in Duluth to accommodate a new center. What are the costs? We don't know what it's going to cost. What's the cost of relocation of equipment? The cost of employees, relocating employees and families? What's it going to cost us to backfill employees for the tasks that we support now that we can no longer support from 200 or 300 miles away? What's the potential cost in loss of system redundancy? And what's the potential cost in loss of local and regional situational awareness? Third question is, will the 3-center system work? From a communication planning standpoint, I have my doubts. We have several successful consolidations around the country for good reason, and they have worked out. Colonel Danaski referred to the state of Wyoming as being able to dispatch all of their units from one single dispatch center in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Well, Minnesota has 10 times the population of the state of Wyoming. A more accurate comparison would be the state of Colorado in terms of vehicle miles traveled, square miles, population. Colorado more closely mirrors Minnesota, and they also dispatch for their DOT and DNR as we do. And they've consolidated down to five centers. Imagine the perfect storm scenario. This, we're talking about the three-center model. We've got, in northern Minnesota alone, the proposed consolidated center in Duluth would cover an area of 44,000 square miles. 33 county PSAPs would be transferring their 911 telephone traffic to us. If the crash occurs on a state highway, county PSAP transfers that call to state patrol. Now we're going to have 33 counties transferring into one communication center. We're going to be required to monitor every DOT plow truck, 100 or better during the perfect storm. We support the game wardens. Every telephone directory in the state of Minnesota lists state patrol dispatch as the 24/7 point of contact for any fish and game violation, nuisance animals, injured animals, and all of this DNR activity isn't captured in terms of activity and numbers. Much of it goes on track. We have the potential for these consolidated centers in the perfect storm scenario to be overwhelmed and communication throughput to grind to a halt. The 2009 MSP PSAP restructuring plan will result in the closure of seven transportation operation control centers. Because of the potential impact on state operations and on Minnesota residents, a decision of this scope warrants the review of the legislature, and this decision should be made above state patrol level. That's all I have, and I'll stand for questions.
Members, any particular questions for Mr. Toomey? Representative Ward, do you have other folks who traveled here from out of town today? Or,
Mr. Chair, yes, we do, and maybe we can just recognize the fact that they're here in support of House File 977. I don't...
We have written testimony from several. We could just have you stand so we could recognize you. Shauna Davis, Mike Marone, is it? Mike, are you here?
Mr. Marone had a family emergency, Mr. Chair.
How about Ray Sheman, is it? Ray, thank you. Dan Starr. Dan, do you make it today? Good. And Twyla Vickmark. Twyla, make it? Thank you for coming down today. And we're running a little short on time. We do want to hear from the department. Is it okay if we proceed to them and take their testimony so we can have some questions? Representative Hausman, thank you. You can be seated.
Mr. Chair, before that, just to note that these are not all MSP dispatchers. One's from DNR, mm-hmm. And I don't think anybody's here from MnDOT, although both Representative Cornish and myself have gotten some calls from MnDOT staff as well in support of 977.
Thank you for that information. Representative Hausman.
It's almost hard to have patience for this particular bill because it comes right after the other one. If I were a manager of a state agency, I think I would be at hair pulling time. Mm-hmm. we deal with the first bill that says you must consolidate, and then we deal with the next one that says you must not. I mean, it just gets at the heart of the dilemma that a legislative oversight committee has when we deal with management issues.
Well, this is a great committee that does good work, and so the chair from time to time has bills that test us in both directions. Thank you for the observation. It is an accurate one, Representative Hausman. I do have a gentleman, someone from the department, I think Ms. Ellison, has a few words for us to give us some more information we may want to consider. If you can make some room for her there.
Mr. Chair, while they're coming up, I just want to let the committee know that a bill is being introduced today in the Senate by Representative Gazelka, and that Tomasini and the range legislators are signing in interest of the dispatch center at Hibbings.
Certainly. Thank you for that information as well. See, with two testifiers from DPS. If you'd identify yourself and proceed with your testimony, we'd appreciate that.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Mary Ellison. I'm Deputy Commissioner with the Minnesota Department of Public Safety, and I've asked Jim Franklin to join us, who is with the Minnesota Sheriff's Association. I'll start out, and then Mr. Franklin will talk about the impact that this bill would have statewide.
In your testimony, could you give us sort of the impetus to for what where the initiative came from to consolidate, Ms. Ellison?
Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to, I want to dovetail with what Representative Houseman just said. I'm at the point right now of hair pulling as a deputy commissioner of an agency. I have to say we are absolutely flummoxed by this proposed legislation. We have had three studies that have been done over a number of years, one asked for by that directed by the legislature, two by executive branch, the governor's office, and one that we commissioned. All of the studies indicate that public safety answering points in the state of Minnesota should be consolidated, including the public safety answering points in the Minnesota State Patrol. We really don't understand the philosophy behind this, and it seems philosophically inconsistent with all of the messages that we have been getting prior from this from Governor Pawlenty, and this year certainly from the legislature. The legislature and the House and Senate have passed bills that eliminate 15% of state agency jobs over the next several years. The proposal that we have to consolidate down from 10 down to 3 eliminates no positions. None. As part of the studies that have been done, we've had a private sector consultant, and again, it seems like the legislature is really interested in what the private sector has to say about state agency operations. We have had a private sector consultant that it says that this consolidation ultimately will save over $1 million per year. Again, we are eliminating no jobs. We understand that it's difficult for people to have to move from one location to another, but we have been talking with our employees and discussing this with them all along the way. There will be costs associated if we are not able to go along with our consolidation impetus. And we have working diligently on that fiscal note. We want to be very careful because we know that this is a contentious issue, and we want to make sure that we can document every cost that we are going to be putting into the fiscal note. People have mentioned that it's important to know how to staff a busy public safety answering point. We keep track of all of the calls that all of our public safety answering points receive every year. In Virginia, the public safety answering point receives on average of 8 calls per day. Marshall receives on average 9.6 calls per day, 50% of which are relayed to another state agency. The public safety answering point in Thief River Falls receives on average of 2 calls per day. Members of the committee, this is simply not sustainable. This is not an effort to be mean to public employees. It is not an effort to eliminate positions just for the sake of consolidation. This is an effort that makes sense over the long term, uses information from the private sector, is based on 3 separate studies that have been done, none of which substantiate the objections to the proposal that you've heard from people who are testifying. So you can see why, as an agency head, when I'm looking at potentially losing 15% of our workforce, why this just makes absolutely no sense from our point of view. And now I would like to ask Mr. Franklin to simply talk about the impact that passing this bill would have statewide.
Mr. Franklin, welcome to the committee. You identify yourself for the record and proceed. That'd be good.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jim Franklin. I'm the Executive Director for the Minnesota Sheriff's Association. Speaking today on behalf of the Police Chiefs Association, the Sheriff's Association. As the previous testifier qualified his remarks, let me qualify mine. I've been in law enforcement now for over 44 years. I started in Hennepin County when there was one channel, before there was a thing called a portable radio. And I can tell you that over this 44 years, the one constant thing that we've battled has changed. Secondly, I can tell you that the three questions that the testifier asked was, why are we consolidating, what will it cost, and what will we save, are the three questions that we have asked repeatedly over 44 years of change. They are constant questions, good questions, and questions sometimes we just have to work our way through. Let me speed forward to the 800 megahertz program. The Sheriff's Association took a very strong position and said we will not support the 800 megahertz program. We were convinced that by through consolidation, through working together, and Commissioner Campion said, let's work together. We think there are things that we can do. There's 108 PSAPs in the state of Minnesota. Colorado has 5. Ohio, well, I was out in their center, has 4. We have 108. We have begun the process of consolidation at the county level. We are working with the state, and we have successful consolidations. Ramsey County, Anoka County, Dakota County, Steel Rice, Candio, High, Big Stone, Swift. We're working on these consolidations. We think they are good things that we need to work on more. Members, I'll just be very succinct. Sending this message to the local units of government and the counties. State Patrol, we said to Campion and State Patrol, lead, and we will go with you. And sending this mass message will set us backwards as we begin to build out the new infrastructure to run the 911 communications center that has to be replaced, this whole infrastructure base. We are looking at how to consolidate that and share those kinds of things. My fear is that if this bill were to pass, we're sending the wrong message. I will leave you with one other thought. I was the former police chief director of public safety in the city of Mankato. Across the street from the beautiful facility that's built in Mankato is the beautiful facility that was built by Blue Earth County with two long towers standing less than probably 500 yards apart from each other. If you go 6 miles, you get Le Sueur County. Go another 6 miles, you got Nicollet County. Go 15 to 20 miles as the crow flies, you have Brown County. And then if you go the other way, you got Waseca County. We've got to do better with the technological things. 800 has been a good thing. It's been controversial. It's been difficult. And frankly, from a local unit of government, we still don't know what the total cost is going to be. But we are working collectively together because we think it's the right way to go. Thank you, and I will conclude.
Before I go to Representative Benson, you mentioned 104 PSAPs. The notes I have here say there are 10. Are those State Patrol PSAPs? How do they differ from the other PSAPs? Do they kind of duplicate services or no?
Mr. Chairman, those are county PSAPs and city police PSAPs, such as Metropolitan Airports Commission, MetTransit, some of those others around the state. So I believe there's 108 all total.
Okay.
And Mr. Chair, members of the committee, what I would add is that we have been encouraging those local units of government to consolidate their PSAPs for years because we know that there's a cost savings. And, in fact, many agencies have consolidated, but they look at the state and say, "What if it's good enough for us, why isn't it good enough for you?" And they're right. And so we are trying to be an example of what we're preaching statewide.
I know Scott County has consolidated theirs. Representative Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to add my voice. It's been heard in terms of this latest testimony, and I just want to agree with Representative Hausman on this. This is absolutely the wrong message to send right now in terms of what we're trying to get done in state government, reducing its size and consolidation and creating synergies between local governments and the state government. So I can't say any more than I think was just said, and you know I'm going to advocate that it's the wrong move, especially at this time.
Okay, thanks for your comments. I encourage us to use the words efficiency, productivity, and right-sizing. I think those are some of the watchwords we're looking for because some of the core functions are public safety. We want to be sure we're doing it right and we keep it right-sized. 108 seems to be big, but thank you for your efforts. Further questions or comments before we lay this bill over? Members, this is a serious issue. We're waiting for the fiscal note, and when it comes back, there is a good chance we could call another meeting and delve into this further because this is a serious issue. We want to give it the discussion, consideration that it needs before this bill moves any further, if the bill moves any further. But Representative Morrow.
Just a very short comment, Mr. Chair, in light of the time. I would just note that I'd have to think about why we're even including lines 1.8 through 1.10. If we already have three reports, why do we need another report? But that conversation could be had another day.
If you'd save that for the next time we get together, that would be a very fair question to ask, I believe. Folks, just a little housekeeping. At the moment, we have not scheduled Wednesday. We may have to, but if you just kind of watch your emails, or we'll get a hold of your LAs, and if they run your lives the way mine runs mine, we'll be talking to your LAs, and they'll tell you whether to come back or not. Further questions or comments? Anything else? Representative Ward and Representative Cornish, can we leave this here for now, and we'll pick this up again at a later time? Thank you for bringing it forward. Members, thank you for your attention. We are adjourned.